Hello, and welcome to Real Talk, where curiosity chases truth. Every week at noon on KVSH 101.9 FM and on voiceofvashon.org at your convenience. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and so happy to have you here wherever you might be listening from. We are on week two or so of reflecting on the worst year most of us living today have experienced. We've been doing the COVID body count, absorbing the ubiquitous fear of that, feeling the anxiety over whatever our political views might be, watching our fellow Americans kill and injure each other, and wondering whether we might be facing another civil war. Oh, and we had to cancel New Year's Eve. So, how are you feeling? To help us all sort that out, I've invited a couple experts on soul, not the music, but the spirit. They are Puget Sound Zen Center Koshin, Chris Kane. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, Susan.
And Vashon Methodist Church Pastor Paul Mitchell. Welcome, Paul.
Glad to be with you.
It's so nice to have you. And I promised our listeners you'd be providing some comfort for us in this weird time. So I'm sure you've been doing that for a while. How's business? Chris?
Well, yeah, for me, business is brisk. I think it, of course, as you say, it's been a difficult year for everybody. People are looking for help. I felt useful in this year in a way that I haven't, you know, for some time. I mean, I guess I feel useful as a Zen teacher have, but this year in particular, I really feel like the practice and the community has helped a lot of people. We've had more people come to the Zen Center than ever, you know, through Zoom. So that has been a silver lining, I think. In a way, we've kind of found each other in a new way and really helped each other through.
Community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Seems to be amplifying. How about you, Paul? How's business?
I have some envy for Koshin's community. I think, as far as I understand it, that sense of being in practice, of being devoted and committed to a daily practice, is something that we can all, you know, we can all learn from, and that can be comforting, provide some daily rhythm for our lives and a sense of communication to one another that's deeper than just happenstance.
Happenstance. Say more about that. What do you mean by happenstance?
Well, I think, you know, we have pleasant exchanges with people, which now seem a little bit foreshortened because we have our masks on, and sometimes we don't recognize each other. We don't pick up on the same body language or I try to smile at people with the mask on and they have no idea that I'm smiling. We're trying to smile with our eyes. But a lot of those kind of things are not intentional. You know, they're just who you happen to bump into, which is a lovely thing. But it's not the same thing as having a regular practice.
I wonder sometimes about what happens to us on the inside when we are shut off on the outside. And one of the things that comes to my mind is that I am noticing that people are less likely to give a friendly hello or to say something. It's almost as though we're hiding from one another. And the flip side of that is when people ask, how are you? Do they really want to know? Do we want to know more now than we used to know when we asked that question because the expected answer was fine? But now, what kind of answers are people giving?
Do you find that you have been giving different answers, Susan?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I will say, you know, as well as COVID will allow, or as well as can be expected, I'm really fortunate. I happen to have a husband and a couple dogs at home, so I have physical contact with other beings, and I get to do things like this talk show and make some meaningful contact with people. Not everybody has that. And I wonder what each of you might be able to tell us about those folks who are truly isolated, truly alone, and how do you see them faring?
Yeah, I think this Zoom thing that we're using today, it has some pluses and minuses, and it plays a role in that shift in communication and what we can say to each other. In some ways, it's less physical. We can't embrace, which is so important, I think, for my faith community. Even in pre-COVID times, the Sunday meeting was one of the only times in the week that some people had any physical contact. That was their weekly opportunity to touch. And now we don't have that. But on the other hand, the Zoom thing invites us into each other's homes mm-hmm. in a very intimate way. We see each other much closer. We see each other's surroundings. We see, we may curate a little bit what's in the background. A lot of people have, a background screen in their program. Mm-hmm. But it could potentially feel even intrusive for people. And of course, some people really struggle with the technology or even resist that. I think we're beyond the point of those conversations. Isn't this strange? Isn't this weird, this time we're in? Because it's getting to the point where it's not just an interim, this is it. This is where we live.
So how are those conversations changing, and how do they reflect people's mental state, if you can assess that? How are you seeing those things change, mental state or the acceptance of the new normal?
Well, we're coming up on a kind of almost a year, right? And I think that's really going to hit people very, very deeply. Maybe we're holding our breaths because of a lot of other things as well, mm-hmm. because of the transitional time and politically. Maybe we're holding our breath a little bit. I haven't experienced people weeping with each other on Zoom. But I can sense that may be coming.
That sounds like it would be a good thing to me. I think communal cry.
So. I think so.
Yeah. Would relieve some of the anxiety that we're all experiencing. And that's one of the things I wonder about. Are we allowing ourselves to be more vulnerable with one another under the circumstances? What are you seeing in people's attitudes? Are they changing in terms of vulnerability or allowing vulnerability or welcoming vulnerability in others?
I think one thing that's happened for us is that we're getting used to the form, to a new form, a new technology, this Zoom technology, and we're getting used to relating to each other in that, and the best way to relate to each other. So we've learned that when you have 15 or 20 people on a Zoom screen, you can't really relate or be vulnerable in the same way. Mm-hmm. We've learned you have to go to breakout rooms to be vulnerable, to get two or three or four or five people together. And so I think there is a way in which we have sort of learned to, because there is so much grief out there right now, we're learning to work with it in this kind of distant way. And I'm sure, Paul, I'm sure your sermons and mine have too, changed this year in a way, you know, adapted themselves to talk about anxiety, to talk about grief in ways that I hope help people. We, in the Zen tradition, we're, you know, we have this kind of hermitage tradition. And so there has been, I've encouraged people to also embrace, try to learn to embrace that aspect. So to learn to be alone. Now it's, you know, that was more exciting when we first started than it is now. But nevertheless, there is, I feel that there is, that both sides of that are important in our lives, both to be able to be alone and also to be able to be very easily with other people. I really look forward to being physically with other people again. And that's just like Paul was saying, that's an important part in Zen. Actually, Zen practice has always been with other people. So it once in a while you go to a hermitage, but even though you're quiet, you're with other people in a room together. That's been a very important part of the practice and has been for me. However, we have learned to kind of have a close approximation, or at least an approximation of it, on Zoom. And one of the lucky things that happened to us, kind of fortunate mistake or event, was that we started for the first time a little practice period of intensive practice when we first started when the pandemic first started. And so we decided, okay, we're going to sit in meditation every morning and every evening together. And we continued that after that practice period finished. So we've been doing that every morning and every evening. Not everybody, mm-hmm. but the mornings in particular, you know, there are 20 people every morning just sitting wow. together for an hour. And that has made a material difference in my life, you know, and I'm sure in other people's too. It's helped my mental health to check in with people. We read a poem at the very beginning and then sit for an hour.
Well, meditation is scientifically proven to lower anxiety. Paul, how do you see folks in the Methodist Church working with or on their anxiety?
Yeah, I was going to say both of our traditions have these riches that we've rediscovered or unearthed or brought down from the attic or whatever, these traditions of being alone together. And we've had some of that in the congregation, the United Methodist congregation here. I've experienced it more in terms of connection with other pastors of other United Methodist churches and other denominations. Intentionally supporting one another in these times, holding space for each other.
Yeah, you've got some big weight to carry.
Yeah.
Everybody else's anxiety and grief. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say the 2 years leading up to the pandemic, I was part of a thing called a 2-year Academy for Spiritual Formation. And it was really focused on rediscovering and practicing some of those rich traditions, monastic traditions. And so I feel that I was very well prepared going into this pandemic.
Good timing.
It was great timing. And it also has been a time when I have felt really freed to speak truth as the Spirit moves me in my preaching and teaching. I don't know exactly why, somehow. This just seems like the time.
Well, I think truth has been an issue in our culture. And I hear both of you saying that your sermons have been about grief and anxiety. What about morality? Has that been redefined? Has that come up? And in what ways does it come up? How do you personally, or have you changed your definition of morality, or how have you talked to your, I want to call them constituents because I'm hung up on politics, your people? How do you talk to your people about morality?
I don't think that the landscape has changed very much, but I think the way that we see it, what's in the foreground and what's distant, has changed. And I think that when we use the word morality, we tend to think about sex.
Oh.
And I don't, I mean, personally, I don't think, for me, morality has much more to do with the imbalance of power. Mm-hmm. And we have really seen that. I mean, if you can say there are gifts of the pandemic, the taking down the curtain in front of the imbalance of power has been a great, great gift. And I think that's where our moral convictions are really being tested and refined. I don't know, maybe I'm getting into deep water here, but
good.
We've seen how much more interdependent we are. You know, even though we don't have this physical contact thing, we are so very interdependent. And we could see that with the just the huge, generous response of people in our island community, supporting each other with, you know, with food. I know that the food bank, their home delivery clients have tripled. IFCH is supporting people's rent, and people are stepping up to it as they are able to contribute to that. Such a gift of this time, is to see how connected and how generous we can be.
Hmm. Morality. Koshin, what about you?
I've been thinking about ethics and morality in terms of, I guess there's different ways to define it. I actually had a long talk with a professor on the East Coast who studies Zen and ethics last week, and even he had a hard time defining what ethics is, or morality, what the sphere of it is. But how we treat other people is certainly one part of ethics and morality that I've been kind of considering recently, also since Black Lives Matter. That movement, how we regard one another as human beings, how we learn to do that. Paul mentioned interdependence. That's something that we work with quite a bit, that thought, that feeling of how we are interdependent. And that gets into power too. You know, how do we feel superior to others in some way? And that can mean, you know, somebody who's less powerful, or it can mean just somebody who's in the other tribe. This whole sort of tribalism, polarization, is really strong right now, I think. And finding ways to regard one another as not only that label, that box that we've put them in, whatever that is, to realize that they are much more than that. Every person is much more than that. I've been, just this last Sunday, I quoted Martin Luther King. You know, he has a beautiful sermon on forgiveness, and on loving your enemy, you know, and just how do we do that? How do we open our eyes to other people in a new way? I think that's a topic that I've been thinking about quite a bit this last year.
With that in mind, what do each of you hope that we as a culture might take back into our lives after we're no longer isolated, or when life returns to whatever normal might be? What do you hope we as a culture will retain from this experience? And I'm talking politics as well as pandemic. Just everything.
I might say, you used the word vulnerability, I think, Susan. I hope that we realize that that life is not, that we are vulnerable, and that we can express that vulnerability in a way that, and I hope when we get back to our lives, we feel grateful for what we have. I think times like this has been a difficult year, offer gifts as well. There's that great Mary Oliver poem. Someone I loved once gave me a box full of darkness. It took me years to understand that this too was a gift.
Mm.
I think that I hope we, you know, we come out from this with some gifts going forward, and one of those is simply the kind of gratitude for human contact, for our fellow humans, and that's at least one thing that I hope we come.
I'm looking forward to gigantic human weeping hug fests in the streets when we can all do that. Paul, what do you hope we can take from this experience?
I've just been struggling with that, Susan, and hoping that we can leave a whole lot behind that we found out we didn't really need. That we can come out with some space, some openness, open hands, minds that aren't yet made up about stuff. Just to have a new understanding. I mean, I think that the degree to which we have not had to suffer or adjust is a measure of our privilege.
Yes. Yes.
I hope that we can come out and say what we don't need, all that stuff. There was a great article in the New Republic just recently about nihilism as an explanation for this predicament that we're in culturally, politically, socially, economically, and the idea that we're driven by this kind of market mindset that says that that what you want just in the moment is what you ought to have, and the quicker you have it, the better. If we could see that, if we could look in the mirror and see that and leave that attitude behind, I think that would be a great gift that we could bring with us.
I think often times of difficulty give us a chance to stop. And we can take that or not. But I hope that this year has given us a chance to stop and reassess some of exactly the same things that Paul's talking about what we need, what's important to us, and that we don't just get right back on the hamster wheel.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I recently read an article that stated it kind of along the lines of capitalism and how capitalism has gone to the extreme, and capitalism takes life and turns it into money. Mm. And we need to look at a culture that makes money our servant and turns money back into life, so that we are supporting the climate, the planet, and all us creatures who live here together. I'm hoping, that's what I'm hoping we come out with. Before we go, of course, we're running out of time. It always happens. I would like each of you to say something that you offer to your people who need guidance in isolation. What do you offer people for managing isolation and the pains thereof? Maybe how do you manage it yourselves? Yeah, I see. Well, what are the answers?
Well, one thing I think that I do is to ask people to breathe and to, we have this meditative tradition that I know the Christian tradition has too, that can give us some feeling, I think, for being okay, even when we're by ourselves. And I think learning to be okay when we're by ourselves can help us when we get back together. So I think that's that's the short. Then how to learn to be okay when you're by yourself. That's a practice in and of itself, but it is possible.
To know that your personal happiness is your job, and that gives you the power to make it work.
It does empower you. Yes, it does.
Paul, what do you offer people?
Well, first, I really appreciate what Koshin has offered, because if we can live with some emptiness, I think we'll all just be much, much, much happier. We are a tradition of the book. Christianity is one of the religions of the book. And right now, during this season, these first couple of months of the year, I'm really focusing on Psalms, because in the Psalms, they're very honest, they're brutally honest, and they embrace the full range of human emotion. And in the same Psalm, we can be so angry and outraged at our circumstances, and at the same time appreciate and have gratitude and admit our own incompleteness. Psalms are really wonderful. And of course, there are modern Psalms as well, but much of Mary Oliver's writing is Psalmic. poetry, visual poetry. These are the kind of things. But right now, just to be very specific about answering the question, I'm sharing Psalms with people and sharing them in my teaching and speaking.
You make me want to check them out.
Yeah.
I'm a big Mary Oliver fan. That connection.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. Thank you
Chris
so much.
Chris Wyman is a poet who talks about a lot about mortality. Mm-hmm. I think that's that to allow ourselves to abide in that for a while is a good thing.
Thank you both. You have been listening to Real Talk on voiceofashon.org with Koshin Chris Kane from the Puget Sound Zen Center. You need a catchier name. And Paul Mitchell from the Vashon Methodist Church. Would you guys like to offer websites so people can attend your sermons?
Sure. VashonMethodist.org. You can get the link to the worship on there.
Mine, also less catchy, PSZC.org.
Thank you both. And thank you, folks, for listening. Thanks for sharing some of your precious time with me here on Real Talk at voiceofashon.org. Stay tuned.
Great. Thank you.